Welcome to the Fellow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 1:12 p.m. that is Pacific Standard Time. Today is January 31st, the last day of January. So obviously people are starting to think about that old adage from the markets, so goes January, so goes the year. And it's been a very positive month so far. That was particularly the case for GE in here today. But before I go any further, what I would really like to do is extend our deepest sense of gratitude for the outpouring of emotion and condolences from the subscribers at the news of David passing away. And certainly I would also like to pass on the gratitude of Graham, Grayson and Laurel for everybody's emails. I have chosen not to post the emails. There are a substantial number of comments that have been left below the piece that I wrote yesterday, and I'm going to continue to post that for the next few days because I know that a number of subscribers don't come to view the site every day. But what I would like to go on ahead and talk about today is one that we've seen that some of the shares that are most oversold are experiencing these rebounds. That's certainly something that's very clear now. Then there is the continued rally we see in bonds. So that obviously has to do with monetary policy. And then we have continued resilience in gold. And of course, that is also in part reliant on monetary and fiscal policy, but also the outlook for the dollar. Well, GE did not quite hold all of its intraday advance, and it has just about unwound its oversold condition relative to the trend mean. So this is an area where we might anticipate some consolidation starting to come through. So that's certainly something that is not at all beyond the bonds possibility. Certainly the new management team at GE has got a gargantuan challenge in front of them, but there is also no doubting that an awful lot of bad news has already been priced in. We are also looking at an upside weekly key reversal on British American Tobacco, and that is also a share that has had a rather calamitous decline over the last 18 months. And certainly tobacco shares are not for everybody. And they are obviously selling a product everybody is well aware that is cancer-causing and tends to shorten people's lives. But it is addictive, and also they have extraordinarily reliable cash flows as a result, and therefore are representative of the defensive sector. And defensive shares generally tend to do best when people start to get worried about growth and about not just growth in the economy, but also from the kinds of shares that have been representative of the big bull market. It's quite normal that at the towards the end of a cyclical bull market that defensive shares tend to be among the last to stage recovery rallies. So that's one of the primary reasons why I've been focusing on the tobacco companies, because this is a meaningful move and we have high degrees of commonality. When we look at, for example, Philip Morris or Altria, or indeed Japan Tobacco, or indeed Imperial Brands, then we're presented with relatively similar conditions. They don't have the upside key reversals, but they are pretty much all engaged in processes of unwinding oversold conditions relative to their respective trend means. Then when we look at other shares that were quite overextended on the downside, for example, Facebook today is up in very robust fashion and back above the trend mean. And that was following a pretty pronounced decline from the middle of last year. Apple is still very much oversold relative to the trend mean and was in additional positive territory in here today. At least we're getting some unwinding of the oversold condition here. eBay does appear to have also turned the corner, and that trended down for just about all of 2018, and now it is back above the trend mean. Netflix, having been among the best performing shares in 2016, In 2017, and in the first half of 2018, has staged a very impressive rebound, and so far has been consolidating above the trend mean. So these are representative of the kinds of shares that are now returning to performance. Then Amazon was also in positive territory in here today, and so far it has been able to hold this move back above the trend mean. It's now closing in on that sequence of lower rally highs evident since the beginning of September. And if it can break that sequence, well, then we can start thinking about a return to demand dominance beyond the short term. The strategy that has worked best in Amazon has been to buy the dips. And until that strategy is clearly demonstrated to no longer work, then I think people are going to continue to support the share. One thing I can certainly say is that Mrs. Tracy's business, which is largely dependent on Amazon sales, is up 50% year over year based on January of last year. Now, part of the reason for that is because some of the products have got that Amazon's Choice moniker, but that is not representative of a 50% growth rate. Now, when we look at Amazon, what they're also starting to do is extend credit to sellers, and they're encouraging more sellers to list in Europe. So they are advertising Europe as being an equally large market to the USA in terms of potential sales. And I had a conference call with one of their account managers yesterday about expanding into Europe, and they confirmed that point. But the reality is that expanding internationally is expensive. If you're importing from China and then exporting again to Europe, you're paying customs twice. So you do have to have sufficient size to capture economies of scale. But one of the most important things about Amazon is that it is facilitating a lot of these kinds of additional costs and making the process easier for sellers. And therefore, they are creating not just an avenue for sales domestically, but they're allowing small companies to become truly internationally oriented. And that is one of the, I think perhaps one of the primary benefits that it is offering in terms of the retail environment, that retailers can just simply open a seller account and they have access to hundreds of millions of people rather than signing leases and having to pay rent in a very uncertain retail environment. Now, when we look at the log scale chart of Amazon, the pullback that we've seen in nominal terms has been very large. But in terms of the percentage, then we have seen a somewhat larger pullback, but not out of character with some of the other pullbacks we've seen in Amazon. So, and that's even if we were just to take the period from 2008 onwards. So the big question here is whether it can push onwards, because if we look at Amazon, it paused at 400, it paused at 700, paused at 1,000, and it paused at 2,000. So, and then I think we can also say that it paused around 1,500. Well, the consistency of the trend would suggest that if it can push through 2,000, the next area of potential resistance is 2,500. That is the reason why people are buying the dips. So that's a pretty convincing argument for why people should be buying the dips. If that fails and people are disappointed, well, then that is going to represent a significant issue for the share from an investor's perspective. Then it's a similar story for Google. When we look at Google, it is now back above the trend mean. So, and it has confirmed support in the region of the $1,000 level. The share is less consistent now than it had been previously, but on a logarithmic scale, which is most appropriate for unleveraged investors, then this reaction is relatively contained, and as long as that $1,000 level holds, I think people are going to be reasonably sanguine about the prospects for the share. The one thing that people have become somewhat used to with Google is that it does tend to go sideways for reasonably prolonged periods of time. And this reaction so far and consolidation has been going on really for more than a year already. So that's, I think, interesting that we're continuing to see that stock markets have been really quite steady. They are reacting, I think, clearly to the potential that the Federal Reserve is not going to be raising interest rates anytime soon, that they could potentially moderate the pace of the decline in terms of the balance sheet, and that is removing a headwind from the stock market because everyone has been worried about liquidity. Then you have the potential that the trade war is going to moderate. The last thing that President Trump wants is a recession. And we have slowing global growth, and a good part of the reason for that is because of the trade wars and the rise of anti-globalization fervor among some of the most successful populists that have attained power. So if they do in fact come to some form of agreement, and obviously this is still a major uncertainty, then that would be really very positive indeed. It of course would then begin to call into question the Federal Reserve's eagerness to roll back on their ambition to continue to raise interest rates. But so far, this has been a really quite impressive rebound, and we've had a little consolidation that was very short-term in nature, and now the price is pushing on and back above the trend mean. It hasn't quite yet broken the sequence of lower rally highs, but there is the potential that it could start to consolidate above the trend mean. What's particularly interesting here, though, is that Treasury prices are resurgent, and they were up about a half a point in here today, but this looks like a bullish consolidation following an impressive break of what was effectively a three-year downtrend. So the rumors of the bond bull market's demise have been greatly exaggerated, at least for the short term. What the bond market is beginning to price in is that the next big move by the Fed is probably going to be to cut interest rates. They are betting that the global slowdown is going to persist, and that's a significant issue. But what the other point, of course, is that one of the things that Jay Powell said yesterday was that in the event that they do face an economic headwind, they'll use every tool at their disposal. This does start to raise the point about populism and the drive towards fiscal stimulus. On the one hand, we now have the Federal Reserve that is rolling back on its commitment to tighten up liquidity. Then you have the ECB that is continuing to buy bonds, and you have the realistic possibility that China is going to become more activist in terms of trying to support its own market. Company earnings have been coming in a disappointing manner in China. So that does give them the rationale for trying to support the market. They're probably not going to engage in the same degree of quantitative easing and stimulus that they did after 2008, but certainly there is an argument for why China should be trying to support the market at this stage. So when we think, therefore, about the major stock market, or the major central banks of the world, they are no longer in a tightening mode. And when we look at the total balance sheets chart, well, then what we're presented with is a resurgent market, and it moved on to a new recovery high in here today. So this is moving in lockstep with the stock market. The fact that central banks are no longer engaged in tightening is positive for asset prices generally. Then, of course, you have the fact that if the Federal Reserve is going to stop reducing the size of its balance sheet, that is not good news for the dollar. Now, the dollar was in slightly more positive territory in here today, and it is continuing to hold the region of the trend mean, because while the dollar is starting to lose the tailwind that it has had from the shrinking of the Federal Reserve's balance sheet, they haven't quite stopped yet. Whereas the ECB, for example, is still engaged in bond buying, and the Italian economy is now in recession. The fact that Italy is continuing to toe the line in terms of its fiscal austerity program ensures that the ECB will continue to buy their bonds. So when, for example, we look at the 10-year BTP yield, it's down now to 5.6%. So the Italians are playing ball, and so is the ECB. But what that also represents is continued liquidity provision. So that's generally positive for asset prices. But then we have the fact that gold prices are doing better. And gold was not quite able to hold all of its advance in here today, and it is a little bit overbought in the very short term. So we may get some pause in consolidation, but this has been an impressive rebound from the lower side of a 3-year range, and the upper side of that range is somewhere between about $1,380 and $1,400. If it can sustain a move up and out of this prolonged base formation, well, then we can start talking about a medium-term demand-dominated environment. What we can also say, for example, is that gold is improving in a significant number of currencies, and it is firming from above the region of the trend mean against the pound. I've done a review of some of the UK-listed gold miners in Comment of the Day today, which subscribers may find of interest. There is a very high degree of commonality in the performance of these gold miners. The price of gold in Australian dollars was at a new all-time high at the beginning of the year, and it's continuing to consolidate around that $1,800 area. But it's pretty similar, regardless of what currency we compare gold to, that it is either testing the upper side of lengthy ranges or breaking out. And when we look at it against the Japanese yen, which has been among the firmer currencies, well, then we're also presented with a market which is rallying. And this has been a very long range since 2011, where gold prices have done pretty much nothing against the yen. So when we think about the potential here that governments are going to be adopting deficit spending, because it's the only answer that governments have to protest movements, is to give them more money. So we are moving from a period of synchronized global monetary expansion to perhaps synchronized global monetary and fiscal expansion. Then we have the rise of modern monetary theory, which is to say that the deficits don't matter. Well, that is perhaps the most contradictory statement anybody could ever come up with, but that does not mean that it can't become public policy. And these kinds of platforms, which are effectively spend our way out of trouble platforms, are going to feature as part of the electoral process in a successively large number of countries. And the rationale behind it is that you can expand your deficits as long as you're issuing debt in your own currency, and that is not going to pose a problem for the country's finances until you get inflation picking up. It doesn't seem to say anything about what you're going to do with the mountain of debt that you've built up once inflation does start to reappear, And it's almost inevitable that inflation will reappear when you simply debase the currency. So that is effectively the new name for debasing the currency, is modern monetary theory is effectively debase the currency. Well, you can't have a more bullish argument for why one should own gold. Gold can't be simply lent into existence. It might be the barbaric relic. It may pay, or it may not pay a dividend, and therefore does not submit readily to a dividend discount model. Although there are a substantial number of the gold miners pay rather juicy dividends at the current price level, and they're likely to be able to continue to pay those dividends until they start reinvesting heavily in additional new supply. So far, they have not been doing that. They've been more content to buy each other because the risks and the financing have just not been available to go out and spend big money on greenfield sites. So that suggests that we're in a sweet spot for the next few years with gold miners. It's usually not until after prices have been rallying for a while that they can source the kind of financing required to go out and start building new mines. That's exactly, in fact, what we saw at the last bull market, that the gold miners did very well at the beginning, and then they did less well after the middle of the bull market, and then they really underperformed on the way down. We're getting a rerun of that right now. There is the realistic possibility that deficit spending is going to be something that really becomes an issue. Eventually, that is going to represent a headwind for the bond markets. So that is something that we need to pay particular attention to, because rising yields represent a headwind for just about everything. But the fact is that we could be presented with a race to the bottom in terms of currency devaluation. That is something that is potentially out there on the horizon, and it is the direct, I think, result of the rise of populism. So when we think about what are the potential tools that central banks could potentially use in a future economic contraction, well, we already know what they are. They have a whole suite of tools that they haven't yet used. This contention that you see among investors that the central banks are coming to the end of their tether and don't have any tools left is simply lacking in imagination. There is nothing that a central bank can't do when they control the currency. And it only requires the political and indeed the institutional will to enact it. So that, I think, suggests that there is definitely an argument for real assets here. And gold prices in particular are cheap. We can't really say the same about property. Property is no longer cheap, but gold prices are certainly cheap. So that is one of the reasons why it is they're doing better in here right now. Of course, gold against this background is highly defensive, and that also is something it has in common with the tobacco shares. So I think this is going to be a topic we're going to be discussing probably ad nauseum over the course of the next few years, because right now we're on in a risk-on environment, and we're getting positive returns from stocks, bonds, and precious metals, and indeed the rest of the commodity sector generally. Now, oil prices today were in negative territory, but not in a dynamic fashion. There is a heat wave in Brazil right now, and the coffee is literally burning off the trees. So that is now looking increasingly like a higher reaction low for Arabica coffee, and that's the first time we've seen that in what feels like an awfully long time. So we also know that this 100-cent level for Arabica is an historic area of support. So there is certainly an argument for, and I'm trying to remember the sugar. Sorry, not typing particularly effectively. The sugar contract. White sugar listed in the UK also has a pretty similar pattern to the Arabica contract, but it is perhaps a little bit more advanced, and it is now right in the region of its trend mean. Lumber prices, which had collapsed in the second half of 2018, have now pushed back above the trend mean. They were limit up yesterday. So that's also something that is, I think, really quite noteworthy in here. And that is moving in response to the continued strength that we're seeing in some of the home builders. So, for example, when we look at KB Homes, they had pulled back really quite in a pronounced fashion all the way through most of 2018 and are now posting higher reaction lows as it reverts back towards the mean. The one sector that was experiencing some issues was the banking sector. The fact that the Federal Reserve is no longer going to be raising interest rates does represent something of a headwind for the banks. And this is a sector that is showing some evidence of at least pausing in the region of the trend mean. So we do have to pay attention to banks because, as liquidity providers, they should be doing well. And if they continue to experience an issue, well, then that will be further evidence that we are indeed in the latter stages of this stock market advance. Now, when we look at the yield curve spread, it was in mildly negative territory in here today. What I found particularly interesting yesterday was that pundits were very eager to jump to the conclusion that the contraction is over, whereas when we look at it on a even just on a 12-month daily basis, we can see that the move we had yesterday was comparatively small, and it would really need to be sustaining a move above 20 basis points to even begin to question that this 3 to 4 year downtrend has been or is over. So I think we're living in really rather interesting times. We're certainly back in a more risk-tolerant environment. And of course, there are things that are potentially worrisome. What I would like to relate an anecdote from last night. I was picking up my daughter from her fencing class, and I was chatting with one of the other parents who is a broker at Wells Fargo, and he had just been through a number of meetings with clients because it's January, so they're doing the 12-month review, and some of the portfolios were down about 5%, and some were down 6%, and then they've come back in January, and most of the portfolios are up about 5 or 6%, so it's looking like a wash for the last 12 months, and people are starting to get a bit more, I think, attuned to the potential that they should be buying in here. That was basically what he was saying. But a lot of people are still looking at not what their performance was for the year, but the peak from back in September. That's where their memories are starting to really come into force, because he said that the chief complaint people had was not so much that the that their portfolio is flat over the year, but rather that they're still way down on what they had in September. So that 2900 point level on the S&P 500 is definitely going to be an area of psychological resistance. There are going to be people who are looking back at their portfolios in September and thinking, well, if I ever see that level again, I'm going to be taking some profits. So we're certainly not out of the woods just yet. Things are definitely looking more positive, and as long as this rivetingly consistent sequence of short-term higher reaction lows remains intact, we have to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. Eventually, we are going to see this market rolling over, and we're going to get a consolidation. And it is where that consolidation occurs, how large it is, and where it eventually finds support is going to be the true arbiter of whether we are going to see a significant recovery in the stock market. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I wish all the best to all of you.